The Off the Ball podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station. Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Hello there this evening. We'll have Professor Niall Moynagh with us and just where the GAA is when it comes to some fairly obvious shortfallings when it comes to the education of players around anti-doping. We have a football show with Philippe Auclair and Pat Nevin between 9 and 10. Plus, on Wednesday Night Rugby, Anthony Davies, who was the independent judicial officer in the James Cronin case, will join us in Wednesday Night Rugby after 8 o'clock. 53106 is the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. In a few moments' time, we'll get the news round from Richie McCormack, but we'll start with Professor Niall Moynagh, Professor and Head of the School of Health and Human Performance at DCU. Evening, Niall, how are you doing?
Good evening.
So, another case where a GAA player has got himself into very serious bother, to say the least. Ray Walker has accepted the findings against him. He'll accept a four-year ban, traces of meldonium in his system, although he maintains the meldonium, he doesn't know how it got into his system, and the taking of which was unintentional, but he will accept the four-year ban in part because he's 35 years of age and feels even a lesser ban, 2 years being the starting point for an unintentional case, is going to effectively rule him out of any further inter-county career at the age of 35. But this is hot on the heels, in relative terms, of the Thomas Connolly case in 2015, an anabolic steroid received a two-year ban again. Unintentional was accepted, and then the Brandon O'Sullivan case in Kerry, who received a 21-week ban. A contaminated supplement in his case, bought in a health shop, MHA, was in the health supplement unexpectedly. It was contaminated again, unintentional was the finding. So that's three in the case in the space of 5 years here, which is not insignificant, and it's something the GAA needs to get on top of. Can we start with the most serious situation and work our way back? You're very immersed in the game. You're working with young players coming through. Do you feel there is any systematic performance-enhancing issue in the GAA?
Look, we like to think that we are angels, but the reality is we live in a modern world where many of these substances can now be obtained online. And we know from the most recent ERSI survey that a lot of players are actually doing this, which beggars belief. And, you know, the rewards are much greater now, even in an amateur sport, than they were for previous generations. So I think the temptation is certainly there. But at the same time, if you look at the most recent ESRI report, we have probably the most educated group of players ever to play our game at intercounty level. So, you know, there's something missing here. I think it's a very, very small number of players who are looking for the edge. And I mean, to be fair, three is a relatively small number when you look at the number of players and the amount of testing that's done. Mm. But at the same time, three is far too many. I mean, I want to, you know, and I've stated this publicly before, I just have no time for any individual in any sport who would take knowingly a performance-enhancing drug, because basically you're a cheat. And you know, when you look at yourself in the mirror, you're an absolute cheat. So yeah. I've, you know, I'm delighted they've been caught. I'm not too sure I'd be alarmist, but it's something that we really need to find better ways to ensure that our players don't get into these situations.
Yes, and just to clarify, when I asked if there's something systematic, and I want to get on to supplement culture, but when I'm saying systematic there, I'm talking about any suspicion of inter-county setups where supplements are given out to players en masse which go against what they should be taking. I have no sense that that is where we are, and I just want to double check that is your sense as well as a starting point.
Yeah, and there would be a lot of highly qualified people, particularly with nutritional background, who are now working with inter-county teams. So, you know, the Cowboys and Cowgirls of the past, there's very, very few of them around. And all of these people have reputations. And I don't think any of them would put their reputation on the line,
okay,
you know, to win a National League game or a championship game. I just don't think that would happen.
That'd be my sense too. Let's walk back from that and see where we are regarding the GAA and what it could be doing, or where the blind spots are. You mentioned that ESRI report. And there were very key, you know, just findings which jumped off the page. This is from 2019. I think we talked about this report, and on the evening that we talked about it, one of the headline figures was about the amount of time inter-county players were spending training, and you talked about it as a runaway train. And we did touch on the supplement situation, but I think right now we should revisit it in a bit more detail. So ESRI report published in December last year, and the key findings when it comes to this whole area. This is the picture. I mean, we're talking about a picture that is in front of our eyes here, in that everything is up front. The players have done the surveys from the summer of 2016 this relates to. So 9 out of 10 players consume supplements and are recommended to do so by teams. And I should emphasize, I'm not talking here about the Ray Walker case. That is the jumping off point. So 9 out of 10 players consume supplements and are recommended to do so by teams. The problem, and you know, you talk about an educated playing group, and I'm sure the rates of third level participation as opposed to most other sporting groups are right at the top of the tree. But the problem is that 26% of players, so a quarter of our inter-county players, are sourcing their supplements from the internet. Now, there was a recent study in Australia from the Australian Sports Anti-Doping Agency. Their percentage of common supplements with traces of anabolic agents or stimulants is 19.4%. You have a 1 in 5 chance when you're getting something like this, especially off the internet, a 1 in 5 chance of anabolic agents or stimulants. You can't get that message out widely enough to our inter-county players. So we go on with the stats. Of those participating in the ESRI study who are using supplements, 56% of them are being monitored by the management team. So the other 44% are taking these supplements and it's not being monitored by the management team. So, you know, we think that, you know, these inter-county setups that everybody's right on top of everything. But 44% of those taking the supplements, it's not being monitored by the team. And it gets more worrying still when you dig down into certain areas of the GAA. So an example given was the 2016 Nicky Rackard Cup and the Laurie Mara Cup. 69% of players there took supplements in the Nicky Rackard Cup, 49% in the Laurie Mara Cup. But the thing was there, only 13% of total behaviour was monitored by management. So in effect, because I know a lot of numbers at the radio can be a lot tricky to take in, but 9 in 10 players in the Nicky Rackard Cup and Laurie Mara Cup of 2016 are using supplements, not monitored by management. So, you know, we can hear from the GAA that it's very on top of education and there's all sorts of information and, you know, players, I think, to as part of the qualification for their grants, have to participate in certain surveys and education forums online regarding anti-doping. And yet still we have a situation where 9 in 10 across two big competitions are taking supplements not monitored by management. So, you know, it comes up again at a time when the Ray Walker situation happens, but this has been staring everybody in the face for quite a while now. Supplement culture is alive and well, and it's not being monitored by management teams, according to the players now.
Yeah, and I mean, the GAA, for the most part, is mirroring what's happening in society. I mean, it's a multi-billion dollar industry, supplements, and it's, for the most part, unregulated, and that's one of the big issues. You know, the bottom line is, I mean, I've sat on the, and I currently do still sit on the Medical Scientific Welfare Committee. And January, February, March, April meeting, every year, we spend a half hour going through how many counties, you know, have done the education, how many players have we, have because it's supposed to be completed by the 31st of May. So there's workshops, they can go online and do it. And what more can the GAA do? You know, now I think county secretaries are overworked, and to be fair to Paul Flynn and the GPA, they're pushing this very hard as well. And you know, at the end of the day, it's an amateur sport, and we don't have the resources to go taking a blood sample or to investigate every single player on every team to find out what they're eating 24/7. At some stage, the buck has to stop with the individual player, and I think that individual players are probably making decisions. I think 90% are taking supplements thinking, now I'm taking this because, you know, it'll be good for me, and I hear other people are taking it. And there's probably a small percentage are saying, look, I'm going to try and find something that's going to give me the edge, and I'm not going to discuss it with any member of the backroom team. There's nothing. I mean, really, what can a backroom team do there? All you can do is your best. You can't. We don't have the resources to be doing, random blood checks on our amateur players. So it's a difficult one. And to be fair to the GAA, from the moment the Sport Ireland initiated the whole drug policy, the GAA totally bought into it. And you know, three yes is too many. And I think if the word gets out there, it's lax. Before you know it, it's 5, it's 10, it's 15. And I think with the current regime that's out there, I think we're doing pretty good. Would we like to see zero? Yes, we would.
Mm. Yeah. Like, I would suspect the vast majority of those players taking the supplements and not highlighting it with managers just don't think there's any need to. You know, I would think it's done in good faith. They're buying them from what they feel are reputable sources. They're probably not aware that one in five, on the internet in particular are potentially contaminated. And so they don't feel there's a need to say to the backroom team, I'm taking X, Y, and Z. But it's still a high number. I mean, 9 and 10, effectively, if you work out the averages, as I mentioned, across the Nicky Rackard and Laurie Maher Cups of 2016 as an example, to not feel the need to do that, you just wonder, where is the blind spot there? Where's the information gap whereby players don't feel they can go to the backroom team and say, this is exactly what I'm taking, this is what I'm doing, have you any issues with that? Because again, the vast majority of these players do not want to cross the line, do not want the stigma that comes attached with crossing the line, want to get on and play their GAA and go to work in the morning and live a good and well-balanced life. But the stats here would suggest too many of them are playing with fire.
Yeah, I think, again, it goes back to trust and honesty. You know, at some stage, the individual player has to take responsibility.
Yeah.
So if they are purchasing a supplement, and they don't go to the nutritionist or wherever the backroom member of the backroom team is in relation to nutrition, that's their fault. They're smart enough to be able to do this. And it's funny, I was just thinking, one of the problems we've had with the whole medical scientific welfare issue is, how do you get the message out? Mm. And believe it or not, the best mode so far has been in relation to concussion, a simple poster in the dressing room. And maybe we need to have a large 6x6 poster in every changing room with the big sign, 1 in 5 supplements that you buy on the internet are going to be contaminated. A simple message. Now, look, I'm sure every player has heard this. You know, it's not as though this, we have 10,000 players. We have a finite amount of intercounty players. And, you know, the excuse, you know, from Ray that, you know, he hadn't received any information from the county board, the management team, I think it's very, very shallow. I think it's very shallow.
On his part?
Yes, I think he's hanging them out to dry. He's a 35-year-old guy. And he's telling me, you know what I mean, that he's now been found with an illegal substance and all of a sudden it's not my fault, I wasn't told about this. I just think that's a cop-out. I mean, I know that the person who works, I don't know them personally, but the person who works, she has a master's in nutritional science. She's a postgraduate diploma. She's a registered GEA anti-doping tutor.
Mm.
I am sure that had Ray gone to her and asked questions, I'm sure he knew about her qualifications. So maybe, yes, there's a disconnect. He didn't feel comfortable, or maybe he was looking to get the edge. I don't know.
Well, no. We absolutely can't say that, because he's very clear on that point. He's very clear on that point. And again, in his statement, he said, I did not intentionally take any banned substance. And anything that was found in my system was completely there unintentionally. He says, I cannot explain for sure how the substance came to be in my system. He says, I was taking anti-inflammatories for a lower stomach issue around the time of the test. So he absolutely denies any accusation he was looking for an edge, and we can't say that.
And my view
enough.
And that would be, believe it or not, I would always believe the player until they're found. You know, you have to believe that. And I'm an eternal optimist. And I think, you know, the vast majority of players, I think if they do take it, they have taken it unknowingly. And I think, to be fair to Ray, I'll go back on that. I think we have to give him the benefit of the doubt here. There's no doubt about that. But at the same time, if he was taking supplements that he had bought that weren't offered to him from the county board set up, I think he should have had an expert on site to be able to question. And that's my issue. How do we make that happen?
Yes, okay. We don't know what he was or wasn't taking. And again, he didn't intentionally take anything, and he can't explain how meldonium has ended up in his system. And that is absolutely his point here. But separate to that, I think it is of relevance. And you could say he's hanging them out to dry. I would see it as a pointed enough statement, admittedly, where he says, when I joined the Carlo panel in November, to the time I took the test in February, I did not receive any anti-doping training or education. So it doesn't matter to me if he's 35 or 21. Like, some 35-year-olds just won't be on top of this area at all. Like, so that is, and Carlo GA can have their response as well. But the fact is, he is saying, I didn't receive any anti-doping training or education, none. So there is a gap there. I mean, if you're talking about the posters in the dressing room or whatever needs to be done, then, you know, like, so there's a turnover of panels each year. Thomas Connolly back in 2015 was on the edge of the panel and came in. We don't know what education he received, but it was criticised generally the area of education in the GAA at that time. There was a report on the back of that issue. So here's a guy saying, yeah, okay, look, I don't know how this got my system, and I absolutely have done nothing intentionally here. But he is also saying he's putting it on the record, he didn't receive any education. That's a snapshot of one inter-county panel. Now, maybe he wasn't there the night they did education and anti-doping for the year. We don't know that either. But it can't be just completely ignored.
But I think, to be fair, it's not one night or a one, you know, yay or nay. It's not that simple. I think at the beginning of the year, the GEA contact all the county secretaries. The GPA contact all their reps on each of the teams. So either something has this serious malfunctioning here in Carlow, and that there's so many cracks. Like, you know, we can talk about this infinitum, but what more can be done? I mean, they try their best these 3 months, and I know Dick Clerken, who's the chairperson of the Medical Scientific, he has a bee in his bonnet at every single meeting. He wants to get the message out to make sure that players are attending either in person or they can actually do it online, and it's electronically registered.
Okay.
So I think, you know, the GEA have, to the best of their ability, tried to make the education available to all the players. And so obviously there's still something missing here.
And we're
going to have to figure out what that is.
Yeah, because I don't think of that ESRI study where they talked to players in 2016. I don't think if you sat any of those players down who weren't running it by their management teams and said, you realise, for instance, there's a 1 in 5 chance that what you're buying here is going to land you in massive trouble. You'll be front page news. Your name will be everywhere. There'll be a stigma, all of that stuff. I suspect they would stop very quickly taking what they're taking. So that would suggest an ignorance. I don't think many of them would take that 1 in 5 chance.
I think research wouldn't back you up there.
Really? But like a supplement that they didn't feel was over the line, potentially contaminated.
Yeah, maybe so. I think, you know, there'll be a certain number of sports people in every sport, regardless of what the sport is, will go that extra mile to get that extra centimeter, whatever the case may be. And you know something, the 99.9% really try hard and stay within the limits. And that small 1%, that's what we're talking about. We don't talk about the 99.8% who year after year get the education, fulfill the recommendations, don't have a positive test. And I think that's the other side of it.
But the maths don't add up there. If 9 in 10 players, according to this survey, are taking supplements and 44% of them are not running it by their management team, then that's a bigger number than just the small 1% taking a massive chance.
Well, I think, to be fair to the supplements, there are the Sport Ireland, there are certain suppliers who can vouch for the quality of their products, particularly Irish suppliers, and you can actually buy your product. So you could buy the supplement yourself, you can buy the whey protein yourself, you know, from a company in Ireland, and it's been sanctioned by Sport Ireland. So you have to be very careful about those numbers as well.
Yeah, true, but 26% of players are sourcing their supplements from the internet.
Oh, I agree with it. It's ludicrous. It's apps. I mean, when I read the report, that was the one thing in the report, that and the 1 in 5. Well, I knew that because we knew from previous studies that a lot of these were spiked to get the anabolic effect. But the fact that a quarter of players were sourcing their own supplements on the web, that was frightening. And that's, you know, there's a big disconnect, and maybe the message that we're giving is not getting through. Whatever the message that we're giving them, it's not resonating at a level that it should be with the players currently.
Yeah. Just one last point. This is more just to give everybody the information as opposed to get massive thoughts from you on it, because I primarily wanted to talk to you about the education side of things. But on the testing, just to give people a feel of where we are, Eamon McGee, for instance, was on OTBAM this morning, and he was given his experience of testing in his career as an example. Have a listen.
How many times did you get tested during your intercounty career?
Never to my recollection. You know, I didn't get tested on it. You know, again, that's the thing about it, that the odds of you getting tested are low enough. You know, so if you are of that particular mindset that you want to kind of cheat the system, you would nearly take a chance on it.
It kind of feels like it's a little bit of a slippery slope, essentially. If I take creatine today, there's a possibility that actually, well, what's the difference between this? So this isn't on the banned list, but I actually feel much better taking it. The stuff that's on the banned list must be supercharging me. Maybe I could take a little bit of that and see how it goes, like particularly in the off season when I know there's no chance of getting tested. Like, is that part of the philosophical question that or debate that kind of comes to the fore?
Yeah, it's definitely, and we laughed, you know, we had this discussion, we laughed as for the lads that were at the wrong end of her career, you know, who says we could possibly squeeze a few more years out of her career if we went down this route. But again, it's something that I don't think many would have taken seriously, but you know, it is that road you can go down, because there is the small chance of you getting tested.
The figures on testing, Niall, stack up reasonably well, to be fair, in comparison with other sports. Like, if you take 2018, let's look at the last 2 years and see where we are now. There were 139 tests in GAA in 2018. That puts it as the fourth most tested sport. You've got cycling, rugby and athletics ahead of it. And then if you take 2019, they just published the report yesterday, you have cycling 218 tests, rugby 196, athletics 154 tests. GAA's fourth most tested sport, 135 tests, 40 in competition, 72 out of competition, and blood tests 23. And actually there's a big enough drop as well from GAA in fourth with 135 tests down to fifth, where rowing has 90 and then Swim Ireland has 88. So in terms of the testing being done, I mean, because there's so many intercounty players, it's not surprising that the likes of an Eamon McGee might not remember ever being tested. That's just the reality of budgets. I mean, we're spending 2 million per annum on testing. I'm not sure, how much do we want to spend? 10 million, 20 million? Testing in effect is a deterrent as much as anything. And you have to hope it's doing a part of the job. But that's where we are on testing in the GAA at the moment.
Yeah, and I would agree with you entirely. I think it's the deterrent. I mean, when this was initially set up, I had reservations about the amount of money that was going to be spent. There's no doubt about that. We have a finite pot, you know, and we're spending 2 million to find, you know, two or three positive tests in Irish sport in a year. You know, you have to ask yourself, you know, that's a very, very small number of positive tests.
Yeah.
But as a deterrent and for educating young people, I think it is extremely important, and it's money that's well invested. And I think people would start asking questions if we doubled that to 5 million. They'd be saying, well, maybe we can spend that money a little bit better because again, the pot is very finite.
So final thoughts, sum up where we are then, because this is going to be discussed on the back of the Ray Walker situation, and we don't know enough about that situation, frankly, to extrapolate too much, but we can talk generally about the GAA. What your overall sense of things, what could be done better, I suppose, is the key question.
I think that the GAA and the GPA will have to work together to find out, maybe do some qualitative research, to do some focus groups to get, rather than being a top-down approach, let's ask the players, you know, what are the issues? Why do you think people are still, you know, going out and buying, you know, sourcing their supplements on the web? And maybe from a start from the bottom up, get the players' input, and then based on that, to look at a new strategy to ensure that this doesn't continue to happen.
Okay, listen, thanks so much for your time. It's much appreciated. Professor Niall Moynagh, thanks, Niall.
The Off the Ball podcast on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.